Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Experts specializing in the development of gang information and the investigation of gangs and gang-related crime. So we'll let him tell us what he does in just a few minutes. And I would now like to introduce and welcome my co-host, Boyd, to the show.
Yeah, I just want to thank God for waking me up this morning and blessing me from always being who I am, you know. That's what I got to say for the night.
Okay. All right. Tony, we'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself and then just let us tell us a little bit about you, about where you grew up and what you're doing.
Okay, good evening. Thank you for having me on. I was actually born and raised in Los Angeles. And my father was from Los Angeles, and my mother's from Texas, Mexican-American descent. And I was raised up in East L.A., you know, around gang members my whole life, even have family members that are. But, you know, I was raised, and the doors open in the summer, just a screen door, and everybody was pretty safe, actually. I decided, after I graduated from high school, and I became 21, I had a little bit of college. I wasn't drafted for Vietnam, so that wasn't an issue in my life. And I decided to go into the police department. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I saw it was a good job, good pay, great benefits. And I liked being outside and doing things. So I figured that would be better than sitting behind a desk for me. I went on the police department. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And I went on the police department, and I really didn't know how much I really knew about gangs till I graduated from the academy and got out on the street. And I just kind of realized I knew a lot more than the average cop working down in the streets of L.A.
Was that, would you say, because you grew up around it?
Yes. Yeah, it was okay. It was like a...
So what made you specifically want to work with gangs? Just the fact that you knew and you felt comfortable because you knew so much about it?
Yeah, I think it's because I didn't have a problem being around gang members. It didn't, you know, I could understand, I could talk, I could relax around them, and I wasn't turned off just because somebody's a gang member. Because I kind of understood it, so it wasn't like, oh my God, I hate gang members. It wasn't like that. I understood tattoos. I understood the language, so it wasn't like I was distracted by it. I could take care of business, do what I needed to do, and also the other thing too is I kind of knew how to talk to gang members. Because respect, you know, as I'm sure you talk about week after week, is a big issue, but a lot of times people don't understand what respect is.
Right.
You know, and it's really acknowledged. And back then, you know, in order to be a Mexican-American, to assimilate into the American way of life, you know, my dad would tell me, if you can read or write, you can do anything. But you have to be able to read and write. Education is so important. And he was not a college graduate or anything like that, but he understood what it was going to take, you know, growing up, for me to succeed in doing anything.
Right. So having both parents and a strong foundation, can you see nowadays how it's easy for kids to get into gangs with, you know, maybe one parent at home and always gone working or, you know, not having the father in the picture? How do you see that that's changed things?
You know, Lucinda, that my views on that have actually changed over the years a little bit, because I used to believe that you had to have a two-parent family and everything had to be intact. Right, but I've come to know and meet and helps form them and guide them in the right direction on various issues. So So it doesn't have to be mother and father. Like down in South Central LA, some of the hardcore, I ever said a hardcore gangster gave himself up to me one time because his grandmother told him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking at prison time, and his grandmother got him to do it. So I had a talk with her.
Right.
And he did. And so I'm saying you just have to have leadership in the home. Because I can tell you, with me growing up, I was worried about two things growing up. I didn't want to get my dad upset because I didn't want him whacking me or punishing me. Whenever he gave me that look, I'd back off, whatever I was going to do. I knew. And my mother, I always never wanted to break her heart.
Right.
And I could never see myself, I didn't want to be in jail and having her to have a visit or even, I just want to break her heart because she always thought so highly of me. So that's a key for parents, to think highly of their kids. And older siblings, think highly of your younger siblings, because you need...
A lot of kids, I mean, it's self-esteem, I think, nowadays is kind of hard anyways, but you need to get the help and build it up and you know, start by helping them do something good in their life so that they feel good about themselves.
Sure.
You know, and let them know that they're loved and cared for and respected. And
yeah, it's not just words.
Right.
It's not just words. It's that you really expect, you really think they can do something.
Right.
You know, I was interviewing a gang member one time for a TV documentary. It was a pilot, and anyway, this guy was over 50 years of age, had done 30 years in prison. This guy was a hardcore life gang member, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him, and I asked him, I said, you know, let me ask you something. I said, what would have kept you out of gangs? He goes, you know, he said, I'll tell you what would have kept me out of gangs. He goes, when I was 9 years old, 10 years old, I got called to the principal's office. He goes, the principal 10, with 10 candles. And her, the secretary, the nurse, and a couple other teachers sang happy birthday to me. And this guy started crying when he was telling me this. On camera, right? And he says, what would have kept me out of gangs is about two or three more birthday cakes, because I never had a birthday cake in my life before that or since that.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three more birthday cakes would have kept me out of gangs.
Wow. Amazing.
So we think these little things that we think, they have a big impression on kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things that they've never had and they appreciate.
Right. Sure.
Not that his mom didn't ever want to do it, but maybe she didn't have the money to get him a cake, or maybe she didn't know how to make a cake. I don't know.
Well, there's other ways of showing love, but the thing is they wanted love.
Right. They wanted love, attention, and affection, and,
sure,
and somebody to say, you know, you're a good kid. You're going to be okay.
You know, the common, when I talk to gang members over the years, a tough question. One of the first, you're talking about something that's an outside influence.
Mm-hmm.
And an outside, what is the most common outside influence we all had growing up? Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I do training with teachers sometimes. I talk to teachers, and I have a daughter that is one, I'm proud to say. And that's the roughest job in the world. They should be getting paid like professional athletes. Oh, it really is. Especially nowadays.
Yeah. That's what I say. There's two things I wouldn't want to do, and it would be a teacher or a cop, because they're both tough jobs.
It's a thankless job.
Right.
You wonder how good you're doing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the teachers are one of the in a family like you're talking about, one of the first outside influences that can even, let's say, put your hands on them but get their mind is a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And the more a teacher would understand that, she'll have more of an impact on that kid's life, because you want that kid to open up in their brand new uniforms. And we lost this game 11-0. And when the game was over, we got killed. And when the game was over, because none of them ever played before, I didn't know what to tell them. And you know what? These girls were happy. They had a good time to go, when's the next game, coach? We had a great time. And
they were part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah, exactly. The perception was so different, mine, for what happened than theirs, because they had done something they'd never done before. You see kids in Southern California. They live 10 miles from the beach, never been there.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I think teachers are very critical nowadays, because they get the kids' attention, they get them to thinking. mm-hmm. and the reality is, whether it's a low-income family or a family full of gang members, whatever it is, deep down I believe they want the kid to do well.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure you can talk to people that are locked up and they'll tell you, well, I don't want my kid doing what I did, or I don't, you know, because that's, I think, how
mm-hmm.
they really feel.
Right.
So, but it takes a teacher that forces us to let us know we are doing some good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it takes. So teachers are very critical
yeah.
nowadays, really are.
Yeah, they are. And with, you know, tight budgets and stuff, it's hard to actually kind of you know, think out of the box for some of the kids
sure.
that, you know, they just need to do something different than sit in class. You know, and it's not that they're dumb. They're a lot of, you know, the gang members are really smart. That's why they can get out there and hustle and do what they do. But they're not, you know, directed in the right way or don't, you know, get the right teaching. I mean, not everybody learns the same.
Do you know that a few years ago, when the last time I checked, the average reading level for a person entering a state prison in California was about 7th or 8th grade?
Wow.
And when they're locked up, their reading level improves.
Right, because they have
a
lot more time to read.
Why do you think that is, though, 7th or 8th grade?
Well, because they get frustrated in school and they drop out.
Mm-hmm. It's not a process. It's a human thing.
Right. Yeah, and there are some teachers that don't need to be teachers either because they don't want to spend that extra time sometimes with kids. You know, they just want to clock in and clock out. And, you know, unfortunately, that's one of the other problems.
But see, the teaching profession, like every other, like being a policeman or anything else, and the teachers that do think outside the box are progressive, aggressive in what they do, care about what they do, passionate. The teacher
mm-hmm.
you're talking about don't take kindly to them. Because it
right.
makes them look bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. Teaching is a tough job, but
it's very tough.
You're right. They should be paid like professional athletes, and they should be evaluated and have to pass evaluation on a yearly basis.
Right.
There weren't much problem where we were. I remember my dad, we had a big radio, and shortwave radio, you could hear the police calls going out for the fire department and for shootings and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't affect where we lived in East L.A. What
right.
was more of an effect with us was around the late 60s during the Chicano movement, where the demonstrations, like at Salazar Park, Laguna Park.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Ruben Salazar got killed, and that had more of an impact where we were living, anyways.
Right.
But I'll tell you something. I learned something from that because I was raised in the 60s, and you know they were turbulent, and the hippie movement and the anti-war movement, and the brown movement in East L.A. with the Brown Beret and pro-Chicano and this kind of stuff. But I'll tell you something. What I learned was, you could be like, we were at East L.A. College one time. There was a march going on. And violence broke out, and these guys started throwing beer bottles at
them. Right.
And that's hypocrisy. And you really, really, really I really learned that you have to live for yourself, and reason for yourself, and make decisions for yourself, because that's who you're left with. At the very end is yourself.
Mhm. So. What do you see the most with gang members as you, I mean, how
two together, because gang members will talk to you. Anybody
mm-hmm.
will talk to you. I'm not saying snitching necessarily, but I'm saying talk to you. But if you know, like getting back to teachers again, I learned as a police officer that with gang members, they care who you are, not what you are. So in other words, my point
mm-hmm.
is, I had a lot of Crips and Bloods talking to me, and I really made a reputation working Crips and Bloods, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not black. And traditionally in South Central or in Southern California, blacks and browns are enemies.
Right.
But I got along better with black gang members probably than Hispanic gang members. I had more success with them, it seemed like to me. But my point is, and with teachers the same way, just because you don't fit the ethnic background of who you're teaching doesn't mean you can't be great at what you're doing. You can't even be effective. They care about who you are, not what you are. What effect you have on them, not just because you're black, brown, or white, whatever it is. So so what I would do is, now the last 10 or so years on the job, I ran a squad of detectives that we went out looking for gang members that had committed violent crimes in the city of L.A. Now, if you have a spectrum and you have prevention on one end, no complaints, no lawsuits, nobody seriously injured, no citizen, no suspect, no officer, no major traffic accidents, and no complaints, and that's because I brought good people into the unit. And most of them were family people. And most of them, they understood how to deal with other people. They never lost it. And I see stuff on TV, and I hear stuff about cops, but you know what? That's what makes the job hard. And I can tell you that most cops...
Wrong way. And then, of course, it reflects everybody.
Right. So most of what I did the past few years was helping to apprehend violent gang members. And since I retired, I do a lot of training with law enforcement, with private industry, community groups, teachers, kid, whatever, I'll tell you what, I tell a story, and I'm sure you have some young adults or teenagers that are maybe listening. You know, I was at a high school symposium years ago, right after Columbine, the Columbine shooting.
Right.
When they killed all those kids in the high school.
And I
was at a high school symposium with four high schools, and one of them backed out because they'd heard rumors. This is only like a week later, right? So people were still kind of leery about, because it was a really bad thing that happened.
Right.
And so I'm talking to high school kids, and this group comes in and sits down. And this is in Northern California. And I had about four or five gang members. I noticed them. They came in and sat down in the back of the room. Tell by how they were dressed, how they were acting, how the other kids were reacting to them. And, you could tell. You could tell kind of who's in charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they come in and they sit down in the back. And... back then, I had a rapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. I said, how many of you here, when you're not in school, when you take off after school, you get high, smoke weed, or drink? But cheering out louder, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, here's my message to you. I said, keep doing it. And they look at me like, keep doing it. I said, yeah, keep doing it. Because I have two kids in high school. And the more you cut class and get high, better it is for my two kids, because they're going to get a job when they get older, because they're working. They're working hard on their work, schoolwork. There's only so many jobs out there in the world, and life is competition.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to cut class and get high, that's better for my kids. And one of the gang members said, can you talk to us that way? I go, yeah, I'm the most real person you're going to meet all day. Somebody said, I'm the most real person you're going to meet all day. That's the way it is. Life is competition.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. LA really hasn't changed much with them. That's where they started.
Right.
In the early 80s. And they've been a prominent gang, but they weren't what I would consider the worst gang in LA or the biggest problem. So they really haven't changed much in LA. Everything around has changed. They're
mm-hmm.
And then the rumor to be the nucleus or the brain of the gang there in L.A., but and they get credit for it, but what they do in L.A. really hasn't changed that much. They've always been pretty violent and one of the prominent gangs in L.A., but not the worst in L.A. But they have.
How long has MS-13 been in L.A.?
They started, I believe, the early 80s.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that they've been around that long.
Oh, yeah. They were a bunch of stoners and rockers before that. They were dressed like, rockabilly kids or whatever, stoners.
Huh.
Predominant the Mexican-Americans, the Chicanos, or the Mexicans, because they're different.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically, for protection, band together.
Wow.
And that's why originally when you talk about MS, people, even nowadays, think they're all Salvadoran. Well, they're not. They originally were.
Right.
And originally some had military backgrounds because they were fleeing from a war-torn country. But that's all.
And they used a lot of young kids.
It was an umbrella group.
Yeah,
a bunch of gangs under it that are part of it. But when you go to Northern California, it changes because up in Northern California, where you have Norteños, groups pop up, call themselves Sureños in defiance of whatever the local gang is. So in Northern California, Sureño would be a gang. Southern California, it's a group of gangs. In Southern California, MS is one of that group.
It's just one of the sets of the syringes, then. How did you get the nickname Pac-Man?
Back in the 80s, they were going to do a movie about gangs and LAPD gang cops.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of friends that were law enforcement officers that were working on the movie with them. And they were working with the sheriffs and Sean Penn and Robert Duvall did a ride along with the sheriffs. And my friend said, well, if you're going to want to see LAPD, somebody needs to ride along with Tony Marino because I know him and he's a pretty good gang cop in LAPD. So what actually happened was the screenwriter rode along with me and my partner one night. And back then I was driving... When I first got to the gang unit back then, I was driving a yellow Plymouth car. But yeah, he goes, you do gang work in this car? Yeah, the way I felt about it, if you're good at what you do, you can do ice cream truck and be fine, you know, just do your work. And then he noticed they're calling me Pac-Man. Well, they called me Pac-Man because of the yellow car and the way the gang was really popular back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had a little lady call me up down in South Central. And she got a hold of me. She goes, you know, they call you Pac-Man, right? I said, why is that? She goes, because of how you look in that yellow car. And, you know, you go around eating people up. But the other reason they were doing it, too, though, is when you have drug dealing in the street, you have lookouts, right? Or watch outs, or you're
mm-hmm.
at home. Little kids at school, they see police coming or somebody that's suspicious coming. Well, if you're saying police or 5-0, whatever, cops know what you're saying. They're going to jam up the kid that's doing the snitching or whatever, right? Jam up the watch-out kid, right?
Right.
The lookout. Well, they're parts of different people put together because a couple of things they did that night, they kind of used the same type of thing in the movie. So that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I have pictures of the yellow car. And when I left, when I promoted out of there, the yellow car basically died. And he salvaged it. Like, it was like I tell people it was my woman, she wanted nobody else, but, you know. Because the car just died, wouldn't work anymore. But
yeah.
It was an old car, but it was a good car.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
We are going to just take a quick break here and listen to a song, and then we will be right back.
What's up, what's up? This RB checking in, but the streets don't love you back. The movement is on, baby. Letting you know, me and LD.
I know these streets, if they don't love you, they don't love you.
Everybody's around here talking about all that thug life, player. Talking about that drug dealing thing. Tell you, baby, it's about getting your life together, getting your head on tight, doing something with your life and stop destroying your community.
and stop destroying yourself, baby. So when the people come at you, they come for real, player. Homeboys on my team done got 400 million before, baby. 100 million, baby. Now they sitting on death row, baby. That's where you want to be, player. Cause the drug game is washed up. The thug game is washed up, baby. They put it in our communities, baby, and they tell us off the top, yeah, you can make this, you can make that. But once they come for you, game over, lights out. Do what you feel, do what you want to do, baby, but join the movement. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. Come on, come on. Across state to state, who roll with the movement? It's time to open your eyes up, people. It's time to rise up above all this street thing. You feel me? It's a better way. Let's do this.
It's moments like this when my back's against the fence that I say, fuck the fence. Life is just, I gotta go and get a bit. Got get caught up the moon. Shit, I'm strong. It started from my home, so I'm at home when pressure's on. We all alone when we born. We all alone when we die. We need to get our shit together. We can make it if we try. Can probably fake it if we cry. But I hate it when you whine. And if all is true with us, then you can take it when you die. I'm on my grind, cause all I got is time. But maybe it's enough. But if it's not, then let me know. Cause I feel like I'm a bus. I'm overstuffed with propaganda. This is slander. Lies, try to slick the public and then wonder why there's crimes and murders on the rise, cause we ain't got a dime. Shit, I'ma hurt some fucking body, you can see it in my eyes. I lie awake sometimes at night and ponder how to get ahead, jump out of bed, paranoid, I'm going backwards instead. Feel like my feet is full of lead, cause I just can't move, freestyle life off the head, cause I don't know what to do.
Man, yeah, hey, the street life, that's a dead issue, that's a dead game, that's all washed up. Let's get our life together, let's do what we need to do. Let's love more, hate none. RB, love, one. Much love to Lucinda, my manager, and my man LG. Let's do it. 100. Out.
I'd like to welcome you back to the Streets and I Love You Back show. Tonight we are talking with Mr. Tony Moreno, a veteran of the LAPD and gang expert. Tony, I wanted to ask you, I want you to talk a little bit about prevention and intervention a little bit more, but I have a couple of questions. How do you see that drugs impact gang members?
Well, unfortunately, it's part of the gang life. It's in the game.
Could a gang member honestly say that they don't drink or get high if they're in a gang, or most likely they are doing it?
I've seen some that have.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say for the most part, the gang culture in general is that people get high.
Right.
But I have seen gang members that don't. I've seen gang members that and I'll tell you what, some of the best drug dealers I know out there didn't use stuff.
Right.
Because they know that's an Achilles heel. They know that's
right.
That jeopardizes their operation or what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want people around them that are using drugs.
Right.
So I'm saying in the casual sense, the young ones, you know, they're encouraged to get high. And that's how people trust you, you know. So, you know,
prevention that parents and just people in general can do.
The keys? Well,
mm-hmm.
If you're a parent, you know, you need to spend time with your kid. You need to be close to that when they're toddlers and they're babies growing up.
Right.
You need to spend time with them. They need time. One of the, you know, that needs to be a priority. And unfortunately, like what a lot of people do, if you have a kid with somebody and it ain't the right person, and you find out afterwards, you know, your job is still to raise that kid.
Right.
It doesn't mean that, you know, and I hate to say it, but one of the mistakes, like you see with a lot of, because one of my, you know, I have two daughters, so one of my things is I always care about female gender, as a gender, females. And the gang world has a big impact on females as a gender. And people worry about females. Your daughter, your cousin, my neighbor. So what happens is, to me, the problem is not female gang members. The problem is the impact that the gang culture has on females as a gender. Because you start to have people doing things they wouldn't normally do because they fall in love. Or they have a baby or something. And then the life gets, you know, you can have a daughter that's 15 years of age, a straight-A student, an athlete, goes to Bible class every Sunday school. And if she falls in love with the wrong person, you got a major problem on your hands. You know, everything you've taught her can go out the window. So you need to spend time with your kids so that when they grow up, because they all hit the years, 12, 13 years of age, and they start to distance themselves a little bit, they try to. You still need to know your kid. You need to be involved in their school. And when you're involved in their schooling and you talk to them as a new boyfriend, well, this boyfriend don't like me, or there's an issue, and who gets top priority? You see my point? But when a woman, or even a father for that matter, they focus on the child, that shows the kid they are important, that you love them. That shows them. That kid should be priority above any of your social, you know, because if you have a kid, then your life changes.
Definitely.
You know, your life changes. So you need to be involved with the kid. You need to know their friends. When I was growing up, one of the keys that helped me was I never got the benefit of the doubt. I've arrested kids that were doing bad things, robbing, bullying other kids, whatever they're doing, and you take them home to the parent, and all of a sudden the kid has a little halo that pops out over his head, and he's like, "No, Mom, it wasn't me. I wasn't doing that." And the mother right away takes up what he was really doing was preparing me for life and not letting me make excuses for what I was doing wrong. And I think a lot of, again, holding kids responsible for what they're doing, make them obey, having discipline, shows them you care. Like getting back to the gangster that say, if somebody would have cared enough to keep me out of gangs, I would have stayed out of gangs. So sometimes, I know as a parent, is the hardest job in the whole world. Because when you're 20 and they're one, you're a parent. When you're 70 and they're 40 or whatever it is, you're still a parent. You know, it doesn't end. So, you know, you have to you have to make that your priority. Then when you get older, as I've gotten older, and my kids are now adults, all the time we spent with them when they were younger, it really pays off. You stay close. You know, and nobody's perfect. We all go through our tough times, but have it in my house. If you're going to have a little stash under your bed or your mattress, don't have it in my house. Because if I'm the dad or the father of the house, you have to have rules. Until you start paying rent or paying for your room. So I see one of the problems I see is that parents make excuses for the kids. And it really hurts the kid down the line. Really, I understand protecting kids, but you really got to. Part of what you're doing as a parent is preparing a child to succeed as he goes through life. If you're making excuses for him or defending him for everything he does, you're not doing that. So one of the days, you're not going to be there.
Right. He just thinks he's going to get away with everything for the rest of his life.
And you know what I see that a lot with too. That's not a gang thing either. I see that with kids, upper middle class, you see with kids that are spoiled. And their kids are priority. I have so much respect for that. But you need to know what they're doing.
Yeah, we talked about this one time, and you know, a lot of times, especially, you know, young adults that are having kids, you know, might not know how to parent. Of course we don't, because we've never been a parent. But, you know, I think as couples get married, you know, when problems arise or things happen, you know, they have to go to anger management or parenting classes. You know, it should be something that needs, that's done as soon as a young couple gets married. You know, that, or, you know, you have a, you know, you're going to have a baby. The parenting classes should not be always for a punishment. It should be something that they do to enhance their marriage and their family.
You're right.
And,
you're right.
You know, it's kind of backwards.
You're right. It is. It's like, why do I gotta go now? Or what did I do wrong?
Yeah. And maybe we wouldn't make all the mistakes that we make, you know?
Yeah. But the other problem, though, Cinda, with that is, the only other problem with that is, I remember being a teenager, and when we were a teenager, we knew it all already.
Of course. Yeah, as we got older, our parents knew a little more.
Exactly. As I get older and I got married and got older and had kids, I started respecting my dad for a whole lot of other reasons after that, you know. Really
right.
Stuff he was going through, didn't even think about it.
Right.
Odd enough, gangs serve a purpose in society. I'm not condoning it, gang life, but they serve a purpose because it's that secondary family, cliche, secondary family that they don't have at home.
Right.
Bonding. That love, that bonding, the, you know, the having backup. I remember being a police officer, the first time I had to call for help on the radio, and you hear the sirens coming and the wheels screeching. That was kind of a good feeling, knowing they were coming for you to help you. Gangs feel the same way. Got people protecting you that you don't even really know that well. But
you're
who you are and what you're doing. So I think it serves a purpose in society, and they've been around over 200 years, and we know why they exist and how they exist, and they're worse now, I believe. More widespread, and I think as the family structure breaks down, it becomes harder and harder to keep kids out of gangs, and kids that are joining gangs nowadays maybe wouldn't have joined 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, accepted in society and the media.
Right. So they join because, I mean, they're filling a basic need, and that's to be cared for and wanted and be a part of something. I mean, do you see that there might be any way that we can change? Okay, so there's always going to be gangs, but can we, like, change the violence to maybe something more positive?
See, the gang issue, but nobody has that. It's all about... Okay. You know what matters is that the gang problem isn't a problem in your home, in your family, in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
That's each of our responsibilities. That's the way to defeat it.
Right.
That's the way to defeat it. And people like you and Boyd and Dolt, you're a catalyst. You motivate other people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it takes, though. It's hand to hand combat. We're all foot soldiers.
Right.
Little victories.
Yeah, and like everything, I guess, you know, we say everything starts at home. You know, religion, schooling, you know, everything does to get at home, and then you go out into the world and you learn from other people.
Right, and when I talk to kids, I tell them, look, if you come from a lower income area or a broken home where you had violence in your home, okay, you're like a teenage kid, okay, now you understand that you have a longer road, you have odds against you, but now you know what it takes. Still be successful. Still be.
My father get murdered when I was 9. So yeah, I really listened, paid close attention to what you were saying. So I really respect all that.
Well, I appreciate your kind words. And you know, part of the problem too, and that we didn't get into it was, like in California, you really don't have rehabilitation.
Mhm.
And that's the key. They really don't. Because I started coming to California in the 80s. And I just knew how it was in South Central up in Compton and Watts and all through there. So, yeah, they never had no really intervention or prevention programs in there because the gangs was widespread back in them days as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was so new back then, too, that they weren't even, I think, thinking about prevention yet.
Well,
it got totally out of control, you know, just like rap music when people thought that was just a myth, you know, and then rap music went on to be a billion-dollar corporation,
yep.
And that's the same thing happened with gangs. You know, just some started in the 60s and the 70s from their life, but it all really depends on you as an individual, you know?
Yep.
And what you want to do, you know? Can't nobody make you do nothing, you know? If you're a man or a woman, you know?
Yeah. That strong power inside you making you want to get out.
Exactly, because you get tired of the riffraff, right. And you get tired of the BS, and you get tired of looking over your shoulders, and, you know, you're in this big inner circle, but you got half of these cats you can't even trust, and they on your team, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just a lot of factors go with that, you know? You can be hanging with your homeboy for 5 or 10 years, and you don't even know that he's working for y'all, you know what I mean?
And no matter if you're a cop or gangster, humans are
human. Or whatever. You know,
yeah, humans are humans.
They all flip in the game, you know.
Yeah.
And by you being a cop for so many years, you already know how they plant undercover in the joint, send them to your jail cell, and you thinking you talking to a regular cat. You done told the cop all your business.
Our responsibility.
Yes, indeed. You know, and
yeah.
you got to know what you in.
That's a hard life.
Man, it's just a definitely hard life, you know.
It is.
No question.
I understand that.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed your speak, man. You know, I want to just give you big ups on that tonight.
Thank you. Just try to be honest with people, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, we are about out of time, but we really thank you for coming and sharing your expertise with us about games and maybe when we're out in L.A. sometime, we'll be able to
give me a buzz.
Meet you or something. Yeah.
Hey, well, thank you very much. I'm honored to be on your show.
Hey, we appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to you. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. All
right.
And we'd just like to remind everybody to join us next Wednesday night and every Wednesday night at 8:30 Pacific time and 11:30 Eastern time. You can also listen to any of just join us next week, and we'd like to just have you remember that the streets don't love you back. Good night.
And don't forget to cop that new book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, at the website, www.thestreetsdon'tloveyouback.com. It's available.
That's right. Have a good night.
Yeah. LD. You know, far too often, we look back in hindsight. I wish I just had one more chance. This is it. This is it. That second chance. Fuck now. I woke from a dream feeling like a dream once I realized that I'm still here. And sometimes these regrets won't let me forget that I done let down the as a young man looking hard, running around in these streets, chasing girls, thought I learned all the world had to teach, but one day I'll out of wake, realized I didn't know it, and it hit me like a brick, wish I could do it all again, but I can't, and I ain't, anyway, I read and rave, write my future like a book, as I turn another page, as the lights go down, I walk across the stage, rub the law for luck, but more importantly, I pray, sometimes, you might not get a second chance, life. What you got, don't be jealous of others, do for your damn self.